welcome back to Rayleigh Switlock's Murder Museum. This is our post-discussion. We just finished recording the Alchemy exhibit with Bill and Danny, and it was a lot of fun. Thank you guys so much for being here with us.
Thank you for having us.
Had a great time. How was it on your end, having to manage that?
I would say it was tonally different than some of our other cases.
Yes.
But, you know, I kind of enjoy that. You know, it's fun to have a murder mystery, and then you guys decide if it's a comedy, if it's a tragedy, or if you guys are
delightful.
Just bullies. You know, it's all up to you.
That's it. Sometimes you just got to be a bully.
Words to live by. but yeah, no, it was a lot of fun. I think there were a few things that I wasn't sure if you were going to catch, like the Delphinus thing. If you had looked in the closet at the records, you would notice that a lot more gold and venom were missing.
Were supposed to be inventoried, but was not actually there.
Yeah,
that's
lovely.
Fair.
That's lovely. I wonder if that's just like we were so far down the track of like we were looking for confirmation, not for clues by that point. We were like, we know what happened. We know that at this point we were like, Lacey took the polyjuice, Lacey killed him, and we're looking for the mechanics of how.
Right.
More so than trying to discover new stuff. So like, I think if we'd gone to the supply closet as like the first thing we'd looked at, it would have been much more likely that that had come out early. I mean, we got in the end that he was probably a drug dealer anyway. So,
yep.
But yeah, it's interesting. It's like the different, and that's one of those things when you write these, like knowing not just what is out there as evidence, but like you don't know whether this person is going to be the first interview that your detective makes or the 10th interview just to get it out of the way before
and
the denouement.
That like, was such a disaster for me in early ones where the murderer was the last one that Billy was interviewing and the least interested by this point in interviewing anyone.
Right.
And that's sort of the tough part of these.
Mm-hmm. You have to try to find a way that you can make a story out of any path. And that's kind of the challenge of it is you have to like put information in other people's mouths. You know, you expected someone else to say this, but you want to keep them moving along. Nathan, is there anything that you can think of that they may have missed or did differently than you expected?
Ooh, well, I don't know that we really missed anything, really. It was you guys caught most of the details, especially at the end with, like, I wasn't sure if you're going to get the chocolate newts, but got there eventually. I was surprised the order at which you solve things. So you went straight, did the portrait puzzle pretty early and found the secret compartment way earlier than I was expecting. So
I'm glad that you didn't have to do it after I got poisoned and have to manage it that way. That would have been quite frightening.
And I wasn't.
It's interesting. I'm surprised you expected that to be later on because there wasn't really. It wasn't necessarily like gated by information, I suppose. Like if you know what the portraits are. And then you see that wording, like, as soon as you see it, it's
and
fairly doable.
Yeah.
I don't know. How obvious is it to mess around with the bust?
I mean, that's also
start playing with it.
Yeah, you two are escape room experts, so thus. I was also impressed that you remember the tea and that you could use the tea because you hadn't found the chocolate newts at that point. I was like, I don't know where they're going to get the poison, so.
Well, the thing is, I don't think I said this in episode, but I said this during the break. I've drawn a lot of pictures, most of my pages pictures rather than words, I would say. And it turned out that a lot of them were very important things. Like my entire top right corner is a ferret, which I think is quite good.
It's a great ferret.
But the top left, you said right at the start of mystery, the introduction was there is a cauldron. So I started drawing a cauldron. But then before I had finished, suddenly the scene shifted and I was drinking a cup of tea. And I looked at my picture and I went, no, that also looks like a cup of tea. It can stay. So it was still somewhat in my mind. I was surprised that we had to go back that far, but it was present. The only thing I'm furious that I didn't write down was our character names. That was the one bit that I missed.
Yes. Phoenix and Lyra.
Everything else. I even have 1854 to present written up here because that was our headmaster dates, which I can't say it wasn't relevant. Oh, the shattered glass.
Oh, the shattered glass?
That was where the ashes were, wasn't it?
Uh-huh.
They were in a glass and she threw it.
That was the dropper.
There was no throwing of ash. It was...
good, because that's nonsense.
But yeah, that was the idea behind the glass. It was an implement to dropper it.
It's perfect. It makes sense. I have just seen the words shattered glass
again on
my notes.
That was a nice moment. having that click in my head of just like, I was trying to still solve like how he had done this and how they had trapped the thing. And until I got, and it wasn't until we started in the red string moment of like, oh, I mean, obviously it was fake. Like as soon as I start to think about it, like he was dead. Mm. We know he died from poison. This was a setup. This was an alibi explosion, which is nice. And I think that's one of these things when you solve these is sometimes you have all of these like little threads and connections that you're not sure of. So that moment of being like, let's stop. Let's take stock. Let's write out like how these things are connected. It's like, oh, okay, I'm an idiot. Like, obviously this is this and this is that. And I liked having that moment. But yeah, clearly the explosion didn't need to be accounted for. It was a set up scene. It was faked.
Yeah.
Which was lovely.
That was cool to listen to too.
How do you feel, Billy, about doing a mystery mired in magic?
Ah.
It's scary.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting actually, because sometimes you get scared when you're in a fantastical situation that you're like, I don't know the rules.
Yes.
And therefore I don't know how to do this. You know, I don't know what's suspicious and what isn't.
At least alchemy is just fake chemistry.
But there's also sometimes there's a comfort in that because you're like, I don't know the rules, so I don't know what is suspicious, which means something in this mystery
can tell
has to tell me, here is a list of things that are suspicious.
That's fair.
Like, because it needs to teach me the rules. And then I can, so in some ways it's almost comforting. He's like, I don't have to be aware of like how a gun works or like what people, or like the ins and outs of wills. And like, no one's going to expect me to know this stuff. It's magic world. They have to tell, I know they have to tell me. And that's kind of comforting sometimes.
Yeah, that makes sense.
That's the way I feel, Bill. When we do the settings that are outlandish or whatever, I like it because it means that it doesn't require prior knowledge more than it just requires, you know, skills of deduction or making some. Yeah, we helped ourselves by keeping it to potions and not expanding it out to that. Yeah. That would get really tricky.
We did veto wands because we were worried about the implications of
I agree. Because the thing that's so nice about potions and uses of them is that they are so physical. So we know they leave evidence and they have, you know, residues and like we can't
you
just be like
physical things to make them happen.
Yeah, someone couldn't have just cast a spell and it's like, well, there's no way of knowing what they cast and what it does. Like, it's magic. It's a little
oh boy,
right?
You know, so this is a nice way to do it.
Yeah,
the one thing that definitely got me from the start, and I don't think I made any secret of this throughout, was saying polyjuice potion. Oh no, people are turning into other people. This could literally go anywhere. It could just be an offhand mention, but very likely not. And right from the start, we went, oh no, this is a mildly burned body. How burned are we talking?
Yeah,
how identity covering
is
this? All of that sort of stuff. And it was constantly playing on my mind of who could be whom. I felt like I won't say this is a common occurrence, but occasionally in life, you just have this fleeting, passing, intrusive thought of, what if my pet is a human in disguise and has seen everything that they've seen? And it's a little bit like that when you have to start wondering, I don't know who I'm talking to. Nobody knows who they've been talking to. This is a nightmare universe.
Well, I think what I liked about the implementation of that polyjuice potion idea in this story is that it was linked with a fairly obvious consequence. Like,
yes.
I know if you've got a toe, no one was ever pretending to be you. It's pretty much the rules. I understood that maybe it could have been hair and ears. But it was pretty clear. It was like, toe means that guy was polyjuiced. And I kind of like, it was very clear and
why did you say toe right away?
Yeah.
When we were looking at body parts, you went straight to toe.
I'm just a genius. I know when someone's going to tell me a toe is relevant to a mystery.
The reason we chose...
I'm glad it worked out that way.
Yeah, the reason we chose toes is because it's not an easy thing to acquire, and it's also something you wouldn't immediately see on a body. So it's fun to have to back to a body and be like, oh shoot, the tongue is a different color, and the toes are missing.
It was
fun. Yeah, that was lovely. And especially because you're right, tongues and toes, like I have to make it... No one's going to just see those. You have to make an action. Like I have to open his mouth, look at his tongue. I have to take off his shoes and look at the toes. It was really nice. It's really interesting playing through this because, like, we've got two different podcasts, right? We have our Escape Room podcast, which is about puzzles, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we have our Murder Mystery podcast, which is whodunits. And I think because we have both, we make them very, very much separate identities in and of themselves, right? There are no puzzles in our murder mysteries whatsoever. Mm. And very often, our murder mysteries, because we are trying, when we really don't want them to feel like escape rooms, we want them to feel like a Poirot novel, right? And Poirot is so, you know, he doesn't care that much about evidence, and he doesn't, like, and there's a lot more. So for us, like, our murder mysteries are a, they're like, they're very, very, very precise, and they're very much about people, and like, no one tells you any, like, no one will ever offer any, our witnesses will never say, like, let me tell you what I saw. They'll be like, what do you want? You'll have to be like, what did you see? And they'll be like, let me tell you what I want you to think I saw. And they say, ah, but what did they actually see? I'm going to find out what that person thinks.
That's why our recordings take 10 hours.
And so they're quite unforgiving. They're not unforgiving. They're very ungenerous from a game master's perspective. Because
sure.
We're trying to be, have characters who are like, I'm going to be stingy with my information. Or if I give you information, it's because of this, that, or the other. Like there's a lot of that sort of thing. Because explicitly, we're trying to not make it anything like our escape rooms. This was a lot more like
we could
sitting
explore.
In between, right? There was collect a bunch of stuff, look at the...
There was a puzzle.
Know, yeah, there was a literal puzzle. And it was like, go through all these things and like, you will get documents that have this information, this information, this information. And you can go, oh, this disproves this equals this. Or this and this mean this. Like, and it has much more of like a...
Puzzle-y feel.
A gamified sort of feel to it. Yeah, like a puzzle game, like a murder mystery game, rather than... Mm-hmm. Striving for that sort of very specific whodunit kind of feel.
I mean, that seems like, yeah, there's a weird way to word this thought where I agree with you, but it was still very distinctly a whodunit.
Oh, yeah, it was. But yeah, some of the mechanics of it. And so it's very interesting playing it as a different sort of playing experience. Mm-hmm. It's interesting how much it kind of isn't exactly the same game. It's sort of like a mix between two of the things we do.
I'll be super interested if we can reverse the swap over and you come do one of our mysteries and see how different it feels for you.
Yeah.
See what it feels like by comparison.
Yeah, for sure. I'm happy that you're talking about this because I was going to ask, how did this mystery feel different than your own? And I think you're right. Mm. We do kind of have that shared ethos, especially I think when Nathan is involved, he's done these really fun like point and click adventure kind of scenarios. Yeah.
Mm.
You guys will have to let us know what you think of the hard-boiled exhibit, if you give that one a listen, because it's my attempt to go a little more narrative-based rather than like...
Ooh.
I don't know. Is that fair to say, Nathan?
Yeah, definitely follows more of plot leads as opposed to... Because, I don't know, I had tend to be heavily influenced by like the Nancy Drew kind of games where like it's a mystery, it's a murder mystery, but you're also like puzzling through it. So,
Yeah. That's fair.
It is, and I think it's one of the things, because one of the things I've noticed about looking at your, like listening to your guys' show and listening to the way the mysteries are structured compared to ours, and one of the things I often talk about is like, when I'm talking to Danny, is I think you're, as a game master, as the person running it, I think you're a lot more generous. It's a lot more like, I talk to this person.
You're a benevolent game master.
It's like, I talk to this person, what do they tell me? It's like, they tell you this, this, and this, and those are the, and it's kind of like, it's much more like a collection of information. And it's just interesting, right? And so it becomes this like, it makes it
collaborative
sort of smoother,
storytelling.
But it's a different, yeah, it's a little bit more, and it's much more, like I say, it feels more like playing point and click adventures or playing.
I think that what it really does is it leans into the murder museum idea a lot more.
Yeah, that's true.
Because it feels like, yes, you are people who are being brought in here and being sucked in to see this story happen. There is a sort of collaborative feel to the meta universe that you have.
Yeah, it does. It creates a sense that there is a mysterious figure who is giving you a game to play. He's like, can you solve this mystery puzzle, please? Welcome to my museum. Try and solve this one. It has that sort of a gamified feel to it in a way that also, you're right, the universe has a gamified feel to it.
Mm.
It's welcome to my strange museum. Here's a little game for you. If you can solve it, you're free. And if you can't, you're stuck in the museum forever.
It's fitting. It makes sense.
Mm.
You know, no one has gotten stuck in the museum forever yet until you died when you ate a newt.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, it's not my fault. I'm not stuck in the museum. I'm free. Death has set me free.
Wow, that's enlightening.
You finally escaped.
That's great.
In fact, I'm the only one who's not still stuck in the museum.
I mean,
whoa.
Yeah.
Whoa.
I've been stuck in there for years now, so.
Incredible. I do think that we maybe lean into, I want to say too much, but we definitely want the story to progress and it can be pretty free with
in a timely manner, unlike ours. It helps.
I don't know if that's, I mean, like, you might have mysteries that are longer than ours, but we still have long mysteries, you know?
oh, it's not about ours being long. The mysteries themselves are not necessarily longer by any stretch of the imagination. They just take longer to make happen and make progress.
Ah, yeah, gotcha. Going back to like the actual content of the exhibit, one slight detail that you didn't really need, but to... Oh, go ahead. Did you have a thought, Danny?
No. Yeah, I want to hear this.
Oh, just the exchange thing was...
Oh, yeah. Yes.
The Prime had discovered that his nephew was really just saying that he wanted to do an experiment with these two very expensive ingredients because he was just pawning it off. He was selling it, the gold and the Acromantula venom. So he found out and just said, I get a cut or I kick you out. So it was an exchange of money. And that's one of the reasons that Delphinus was so weirded out by his visit, because he expected an exchange of funds and the Prime didn't even ask about it.
Gotcha.
Yeah, because at that point it was not...
Was not...
The Prime.
Yeah, not the Prime, yeah. And she had not taken the knowledge potion yet, so...
Ah, interesting.
Ah, fun.
All right.
Which means that in the initial one with Karina, it was the Prime.
Yes.
And it wasn't that she had the knowledge potion that let her know about the previous, you know, professionalism violation, but in fact she's taken the knowledge potion, which lets her know that about the yelling...
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And if you would have dug into that as well, Lacey was actually teaching a class from 7 to 8. If you had asked about
timelines. That's a very reasonable thing to search for.
So she...
You think that when I started asking what time were things happening last night, that I might have been interested in such things.
You figured it out. You didn't need
yet,
it.
All I was interested in was this sandwich. That was all I cared about in the end.
I tried to save the coffee to offset a little bit of the suspicion that a really smelly sandwich puts on a character, but you know.
Made it worse.
Incredible.
That made me think, oh, you mentioned it's early morning. Coffee, that makes sense. Nothing because he's just woken out of bed. That makes sense. A sauerkraut sandwich is the first thing when you wake up in the morning. No, no, no.
I don't care what universe we're in.
Either my first thought was, oh, this person has clearly been up all night and now they're hungry for sandwiches because it's lunchtime to their circadian rhythms.
Aha.
That's how it works. But no, it was really fun. Look, and it was really, it all came together really well.
It did. I felt satisfied. I felt like we had a conclusion. And
it was definitely a satisfying murder.
I felt like it. I think that structurally we did what you're supposed to do. We started red stringing, talking through our final thoughts when we almost had it. And then through the process of talking, the last little bits fell
in
there.
Which was great.
Yeah. You know, one thing that we were missing in some of our other mysteries, we have more of like a climactic final moment. And when we actually play tested this, the person...
oh my goodness.
Actually, do you want to say, Nathan?
Oh, sure. Yeah. Well, they confronted the murderer, Lacey, and Lacey had locked him in a room. They'd already found the antidote, so they were fine. Lacey was just waiting for them to die. And the playtester grabbed the marble bust and hit them over the head with
it. Oh, God!
Oh, no!
So
there was a bit more of the panic of like, oh, she locked a room and oh no, they need to figure out the antidote and stuff like that. Like they didn't have access to the ferret and that was a whole thing. So I like that drama. I felt a little silly just like monologuing as the villain when she really had no reason to be doing it. But I was like, you know what? It's good. You know, this is how it goes.
No, that's very fair. It leaned into us feeling oblivious to our privilege.
Yeah. Also fun.
It's interesting as well, because that's often like for us, that's the hardest part of the murder is like villain monologue is great for the play. Because usually for us, it's like, all right, you think you've got it. Come up with a full, get them in the room, do the full Poirot style denouement. Tell me every single thing that happened. You, the player, please quickly and tell me every detail right now in a fun narrative way. And so that can sometimes be a stressor. Like, wait a minute, let me hold on. How do I put this all together? And it's fun, though. When it comes together, it's very nice.
That was the sort of thing that I was hoping would smooth out by having two detectives rather than one. I wouldn't say that much got smoothed out by having two detectives
no,
rather than one.
It was great.
But, yeah, perhaps the actual receiving of the information, like, I feel like I was never going to comment on the desk, so good job there for spotting that.
That was
hulky desk that can hide a body.
Yeah, I liked having that moment of realization of like, I know what this desk looks like.
Because I drew it just like a normal four-legged table because I can't draw fancy desks.
Alas, alas.
Well, I think we'll wrap up around here unless you guys have any last thoughts or questions.
I did just one follow-up thing. You two, how was it with two detectives from your perspective? How does it differ from one?
Oh, and also, how was it with two people running it and writing it together?
Yeah.
Nathan and I have had the fun experience of collaborating on things before, so the actual writing of it wasn't the worst thing. The actual running of it was interesting because, like, you know, there were a couple of months where I was like, oh, is he going to say the thing? And I'm sure that happened to you, where you're like, oh, is that character going to say the thing?
Yeah, yeah. It was definitely a fun dynamic to be one or the other. But yeah, like, when's Marcus going to slide in this detail? Or, like, how is he going to emphasize that? Like, that's going to be really interesting to see. So I actually had a lot of fun with it, so.
And at least when we have, on the rare occasion that we have that moment, the two of us are in the same room as each other, so we can just mouth things to each other.
Yeah, at one point I was trying to sign language to Nathan, like, are you going to mention that the back of the head of the dead body is, like, not, there is no wound there?
Oh, I saw you doing that. I was like, what does that mean?
I was like, you got, like, they just think it's an accident. You got to let it, like, you didn't need to know that.
That is always the hardest thing when you're like, oh no, like, they didn't get this piece of information. Like, what do I, and half the time they don't need it.
Yeah.
Or they get it later. You know, they come back to it. They'll figure it out. It's always tough.
Yeah.
Having two detectives. How was that?
I mean, I was.
Were we annoying?
It meant that you didn't need a pocket Watson. There didn't really need to be a hint system. Yeah.
I was slightly worried that you guys would just bounce off each other so well and then just solve it within like 10 minutes. That was the main worry. But
yeah, that's not how we work.
It is one of these things. Like, we run a lot of these, you know, murder mysteries for ourselves, and we have one person playing, and often you get these moments where it's like, if they miss something, there's no second person to have found it, right? Mm-hmm. And we get this occasionally. We very, very occasionally had one person playing escape rooms that we've made. And whenever we do, invariably, they get super stuck at some point, and all they need is like, hey, take a look at this thing again, or think about this again.
There was one thing that was said that you didn't notice the importance
of. Having two people makes such a difference of just to catch each other's little mistakes or to note, like, but why would you think that? Isn't it this?
You
like,
feel a lot safer.
That, you know? Mm-hmm. So it is that, and it does, you know, it makes you think, you know, maybe there's a format for a second person in Solve This Murder to play.
Yeah.
Or at least to call up and be like, hello, let me bounce some ideas off.
Hey, because invite, it is very helpful. One of us. Hey.
Exactly. Because, yeah, it's just like, it's nice. It's because there are certain things where I was on certain wavelengths and then you had to be like, what about this? And I was like, yeah, okay, of course. Obviously, what about that? Or, you know.
Problem is, there are mysteries, like, for our recent one where I'm the detective and you think there are things that I could do. If I were to call up one of you guys, you would definitely say, oh, well, why don't you just go to Joe's house? And I'm like, but I can't explain to you emotionally why I don't want to go to Joe's house. It just doesn't feel like something I want to do, okay?
That's hilarious. Oh, the worst thing in the world is when someone's like, all right, well, that's important, and it's not.
Oh, yeah.
Which is why I'm glad the sandwich was very important.
Yeah, I have a confession. I've actually changed the plot on that before with Nathan. So occasionally I stick to my guns and he says a cool idea and I'm like, no, that isn't correct. But there was, in our last case, in the hard-boiled exhibit, there's a part where there's a bit of like fluff on the ground and there's been a murder. And he was like, oh my gosh, it was a muffler. They used a pillow as a muffler. And
oh,
I was like,
my
and
gosh.
He looked around and I was like, and there you found it. It's right there. The muffler that you were just talking about is right there. Exactly like you thought. Because I'm so smart and you're so smart and we were thinking the exact same thing.
I mean, quite frankly, there were points in this that you never know at the start with the questions that we're asking, the things that we're choosing to look for. Like, every time I did something or asked something, more or less, you would say yes. And it felt very comforting and trustworthy. And I couldn't tell that. I think that it was just because we were on the same page for a lot of things.
I don't think we made up stuff.
Things up to be agreeable.
No,
but
I promise. Not this time. Not this time.
I think this is one of those things that in a first a couple of solve this murders. We had occasionally like someone get stuck on something and Danny would like try and turn it into a real fact or like go into it. And I think we've gotten a lot more comfortable now when running it. If someone's like, oh my God, this thing is super, super important, to occasionally just be like, just as a heads up, no, it's not.
Yeah.
Just like you're going to waste your time if you follow up on that. They're like, all right, great.
Yeah, and I think occasionally we've done that. We've used our Pocket Watson mechanic as a, hey, heads up, go in a wrong direction here. Or yeah,
just don't worry about it.
Yeah. But yeah. Oh my gosh, I remembered one other thing that I wanted to mention about this exhibit, which is Nathan and I were in a master's program together. That's actually how we met. So I do want to say that although parts of this might be lightly inspired by our experience. Any places, objects, or what's the line? It's like
entirely coincidental. Yeah.
Similarities are
any resemblance to persons living or dead.
Any reputations of an actual industry.
It's funny because I was like telling my wife about this case. I was like, and then there's one student that's just like fed up with academia. Like she just hates it. And my wife quietly nodded. And she was like, yeah. Does anyone from your program listen to your podcast? And I was like, I don't think so, but this is such a fair point. So I will say that like, I didn't mean for any of that if someone is listening.
I don't think anyone's attitude towards academia was insulted through this.
You never
is
know.
The thing.
That's fair.
Yeah. There might be some people who feel like they are being pointed at and zoomed in on a little bit, but yeah,
it's
not in a harmful way.
That's purely coincidental. Yeah.
Yeah. Please don't say
that. The only thing harmed was people's trust in academic honesty. As well it should be.
Facts.
Cool. So you mentioned something about the Golden Idol.
Well, yeah, I just figured, like, we're doing a recording here and you know, we're all working on, and I'm announcing it everywhere, so I'm pretty sure we can. We're all working on Rise of the Golden Idol right now. We haven't had a huge amount of overlap in, like, designing stuff together. It's been fairly sort of siloed. Have you found, like, that you're using, does it feel similar to writing these episodes of Aurelius Whitlock? Do you feel like you're using a similar type of design when you're going and working on making these murder mystery or semi-murder, like, stuff for Rise of the Golden Idol?
Hmm. What do you think, Nathan?
How's the experience been for you?
I think, at least for me, I don't know if you agree, Marcus, but I feel like Golden Idol has been a lot more visual because we are working with a visual medium and, like, we need to see, we have, like, a snapshot of one moment, and so picking the moment is really important, and then picking what goes on around that moment is also really important. So we've generally come up with like a concept, a cool like visual thing, and then we've plotted it out and then put it again. We always go back to the visuals. Like, we have a whole bunch of temp art for all the scenarios we've done. And I feel like as opposed to when I do this, I have like pages and pages of notes and links and where things go. Yeah, what about you, Marcus?
Mm-hmm. I would say the main crossover between the two is I frequently call the scenarios in that game exhibits, and I call the exhibits in our podcast scenarios. So it's all muddled up in my mind. I think for the like ideation of like what could be an interesting mystery, there's a lot of overlap. I do think that there's kind of a shared pool in my head of cool concepts and ideas. But I agree with Nathan that the actual process of taking that idea through the concept phase is different because of the mediums.
Yeah, it is interesting, right? Like, because you know as well, like, having an understanding of that craft, like, what they see and how it's presented, whereas in the audio, like, it is kind of like, here's a list of things you can look at. Why don't you start to look at them? And people build up an image as they go, whereas for the Golden Idol stuff, it's like they're presented with the full image. You see it all, and then it's
and
like,
then pull it apart.
You pull it apart and you figure out what's going on. So it's kind of like going the other way around compared to audio and in the visual medium. It's been an interesting experience designing. Of course, also interesting, like, designing is part of a team, which, you know, we don't do as often, like,
right.
which has been fun, and like and working with the creators of the game and how they're and building into a story, but not having like full control of the story. Like, it's interesting being writing stuff to be part of a bigger thing,
right?
Yeah.
And that bigger thing is is somewhat preset and somewhat malleable. It's been a really interesting experience. It's good fun.
It's interesting because you have to, you know, kill your darlings in the sense that you might have an idea and they're like, yeah, that's really cool. Not for this.
yeah.
But that's also just how writing works, you know, like in industries. So,
yeah.
But yeah, I'm really excited to keep on working with it and keep on talking about it. I won't shut up about it when it comes out is what I think.
It's a lot. The first one was so good and so well received and everyone loves it. And people are actually waiting for this game to come out.
Oh, I know. Yeah. It's a lot of pressure. Do you know how hard it is for me not to jump onto the Discord where random fan people are talking about what cool things they think are going to be in the next game? And I have to be like, I don't want to look at that because I'm not going to put them in if they're cool. And I'm going to feel bad if you don't mention stuff I've already put in. So I just don't look at it. Make sure I never see it.
Yeah, I think I made a mistake by making a theories thread in our Aurelius Whitlock's Murder Museum Discord because I kind of want to look over there. And I'm like, dang it, that's a better idea than what we have. Like. Shoot, can I in good conscience just say that, do what I did with the muffler and just say, you got it, like it the
you
entire
got
time.
It. Good work.
Oh my goodness.
It is very funny. But no, it's been a lot of fun. And thank you for getting us on to do this. It was really fun to play through. And
it was experimental. We didn't quite know how it was going to work coming into it. I was very worried I would crash and burn.
But to be honest, it felt like a sort of a melding of the sort of stuff that we're doing. Like it didn't feel like an Escape This Podcast. It didn't feel like a Solve This Murder, but it still felt comfortable enough for us to play through in a really interesting way. It was very enjoyable.
Yeah, the descriptions of Solve This Murder and Aurelius Whitlock's Murder Museum, if someone is giving the elevator pitch for it, they'd be basically identical. And yet
they feel different in some ways.
Yeah.
Well, it's all one big mixing pot or cauldron, if you will, of all our skills and passions.
Don't drink from the cauldron, you'll die.
Facts. Really quick, do you guys want to share where people can find you, where people can find what you've been doing?
Yeah. Look, if you enjoyed this and you'd like to check out other stuff that we're doing, just search for Escape This Podcast and you'll find all our fun escape room stuff. There's an episode with you two playing, so that's a good one to start. I can't remember that. If you put the word ice cream in there, if you put Aurelius Whitlock in there, you'll find it.
Yep.
And that's probably a great place to start there. And then Solve This Murder, if you want to find all of our murder mysteries and what we're doing.
You mentioned the Nancy Drew games before.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Got a Twitch stream archive somewhere. All of our pages are linked. You'll be able to find everything together.
Yeah, they're all sort of connected. Yeah, we played through every single Nancy Drew game on Twitch, and there are VODs for all those sitting somewhere. You can find everything we do at consumethismedia.com is our sort of umbrella website. If you go to consumethismedia.com, there's links to all the other stuff. But yeah, I hope you check it out and enjoy it.
Sweet.
Awesome. Thank you so much for this unedited discussion. I say unedited because I don't think I'll edit it. We'll see. It's just great to talk with you guys. We really appreciate you being here and hope to do something again with you guys soon.
Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful.